So this class is the last class of Zman. Tomorrow there's some kind of cleanup or you're setting up the Beit Midrash, so our class was canceled tomorrow, although we tried to figure out another time to work out, but it didn't work out. So I think the best thing to do with the last class of the Zman is open up the floor to asking any question you want about anything that I did with you until this part of the year, anyways, until now, from the beginning till now, yeah. And what I'm about to do is, like, let me just hear the questions and then see if there's a pattern, see if there's, you know, a couple of themes that are going on here. So, yeah, Yakir.
So, this is in last week. Can you reiterate on what you said about Olam Haba and how there's no really, world to come until the world is coming? I don't really understand that.
Okay. Talk about Olam Haba, yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Rabbis who believe that there's a God in the sky, are they wrong? Like, are they misinformed? Like,
okay. Good, yeah.
If God's absolutely perfect in and of himself, why does he need to have us in order to kind of confirm his perfection by us kind of getting to that absolute perfection?
Okay, there's no pattern here at all between all these questions, so we'll see if I can remember them. But okay, you remember your question, and then we'll go back over them. Go ahead, yeah?
What's the deal with, like, Priya and Miki? And, like, why? It seems like a pretty central part of the faith. Do we say, like, 3 times a day?
Why is Priya and Miki so important?
Yeah.
Okay.
Another question?
Yeah, sure.
Why can't God make the world with Mashiach in it? Why do we have to work towards
Mashiach? Okay, why do we have to work towards Mashiach? Yeah.
Which
one of my books is my favorite book? That's like asking which one of my children is my favorite child. My favorite book is the one that you can buy right now. Okay, so as I might have mentioned to you, we reprinted "Living a Joyous Life," and it goes to the daily Jewish living, which is, you know, why learn Torah. Why live mitzvot, why celebrate Shabbat, why pray, why eat kosher, la briyut. That was the last chapter. So it's available at a serious discount, so if you want to get it for yourself or get it for friends or get it for Pesach or whatever. So I think they made that announcement to you already. Do you know about this?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, but anyways, I don't have a favorite book. They're really all my favorite book. I would say the one that most correlates to the material that I've been doing with you, although we've been doing way beyond what's in that book, is The Secret Life of God, and then the psychological implications of that, which is in The God-Powered Life. Okay? There's another book I wrote that we're reprinting right now called Seeing God, and I haven't touched any of that material in this course, really. All right, but let's start here. Actually, I want to start off with Ben's question, because his question is based on a serious misunderstanding, not necessarily your fault. I mean, it probably is your fault, but not necessarily your fault. Might be my fault, okay? Just joking, okay? Okay. Okay, yeah, Ben, you're okay? All right. You know, first of all, and also it's a little bit connected to Josh's question too. You have to remember, we don't really talk about Hashem. This is not theology. We don't understand Hashem. Late Machshava Tfisa Bey. The mind cannot grasp who Hashem truly is. So how can you on one hand say that late Machshava Tfisa Bey, we cannot really fathom the truth of God, and yet talk about God and have a chumash about God and all that? And the answer is that we are only allowed to talk about God and remind ourselves that all this is relative to us, and we can talk only if it's relevant to us. Okay? This is, of course, about us. It's not about God. But since we, Torah says, are a part of, a facet of, an aspect of God. So in order to understand ourselves, we have to talk about God. But the whole motivation for any of this discussion was to understand ourselves. And we're not talking from top down. We're not asking, well, why did God create the world this way? Right? We're asking, now that the world exists why is it this way, right? In other words, we're starting from bottom up. Here I am. I feel imperfect. I live in a world that's imperfect. And yet I have this incredibly ridiculous expectation that my life can be and should be meaningful, that my life can be and should be valuable. And then we move from there. And as Rav Kook said, that the search for philosophy is really a search for a philosophical articulation of what you already know in your heart. Okay? There's a truth that we already know in our heart, and we're trying to articulate it, right, to have greater clarity, you know, on our lives. But this is really about us. So Hashem doesn't need us. Can somebody explain to me why it's incorrect to say that Hashem would need us? Eitan? Eitan. We're going to have to turn you into the Paschal Lamb, Eitan. Okay. Okay. Want to try? You want to rewind, Eitan? Try again.
We are passes of Hashem.
Yes. And therefore, to say that Hashem needs us implies that there's Hashem and us, that there's someone outside of Hashem, and Hashem needs something from someone outside of Hashem. But someone is not outside of Hashem because someone is some of the one. Oh, man. That is so cliche-ish, man. Okay, so you started to talk like, you know, like me. That's a scary thing. So, yeah, some of the one. So it's a meaningless statement. It's wrong and it's meaningless to talk about a God who needs, because a need is always a relation between that you and that which is outside of you, and you need to bring in something, right? So God does not need you. However, it would be correct to say that you express a very significant aspect of Hashem, okay? A very significant aspect of Hashem, because since Hashem is absolute perfection, and when we try to understand absolute perfection, we end up speaking in a paradoxical way, that absolute perfection, while being perfect, includes the possibility of becoming perfect. And we are the unfolding of, we are the embodiment of that that becoming perfection side of Hashem, okay? And the importance of this idea, I mean, there's lots of very serious implications of this idea, but one is how to look at your life filled with struggle, possibly even pain, certainly much encounter with difficulty. Do we have an image of a God who is stoically watching us from above in his la-la land realm, where he is the most fortunate of all, and we, for some reason, are the amongst the most unfortunate of all, trying to get closer to the fortunate one? Okay, and the answer is no. Ki anochi mo b'tzara, ani anochi mo b'tzara. Hashem says, "I am with you in your pain." Now, how can Hashem be with me in my pain? Right? Why would Hashem even want to be with me in my pain? What? Right. So even more so, why would he want to be with me in my pain?
Because
he is the pain.
He's also going through the pain.
Yeah. We're part of it.
Because we're part of him. It's like my finger. If my finger is in pain, I'm in pain. If my finger is a part of me, okay? My finger is a part of me. Now the question is, why would God allow himself or a part of himself to go through pain? And the answer to that question is, well, if you don't know, then we're going to fail you from the course and you'll have to come back next year, right? Well, what do you mean? So why would Hashem choose to participate in pain? Because of growth. Because it's all about growth. But not suffering. Hashem doesn't say, "I am with you in your suffering." Hashem says, "I am with you in your pain." There's a big difference between pain and suffering. I don't know if I've shared this with you. When my wife gave birth to our first child, did I give you that story?
Yeah.
Right. All right, so my wife was, you know, giving birth to our first child. And we had gone to all the, you know, preparatory classes, we went to Limaz, but when we got to the hospital, I felt more like a Shlimaz than a Limaz master. Limaz is a shita, is a method of helping women to cope with the incredible pain of contractions and giving birth. And so there we were in the birthing room, and my wife was in excruciating pain with every contraction, and I was feeling horrible, and I was beside myself, and I asked the nurse if I could have an epidural or something to calm down. And when my wife was in this incredible pain, and it was, to watch it was horrible, and she suddenly came out of a contraction and looked at me with this awesome calm. And she said to me, "Could you please calm down?" Right? And I go, what? And she said, "I'm in excruciating pain, but I'm not suffering." That's what a woman is able to say in the last few minutes before she gives birth in such incredible pain. And then she had this incredible, horrible contraction. And then she came out of it. She said, "Suffering is when pain has no meaning. This is the most meaningful pain I could ever hope to have in my life." My wife is the deeper side of me, I'm telling you. I mean, my best stuff, it comes from her. And really, that's the point. How do you prevent your life on the pains of your life from becoming suffering? You have to turn it into power by giving it purpose. When you give pain purpose, it turns into power and growth. And that's what you got to do. Right? I'm going through pain. What's going on? I can tell you most of the time you're giving birth. You're giving birth. You're giving birth to a new idea. You're giving birth to a new power within yourself. You're giving birth to a new perspective on your life. And you know what? To give birth is very painful. Why? Because something old has to open up and make space for something completely new. And that's painful. That's really, really painful. Okay? When you're going from a limited space to a whole new beyond comfort zone, it's uncomfortable to get beyond your comfort zone. It just is, you know? And so whatever pain you're going through, always ask yourself, okay, what am I about to give birth to? What's the purpose of this pain? Not why is this happening to me? That is a very disempowering, and that will cause you suffering. Why am I in pain? Well, if I say to my mind, well, why am I in pain? My mind says, well, maybe because you're a jerk, maybe because you're a sinner. Maybe because God is a sadist and he loves to see you this way, right? That's not a good question. A good question, a growth question, is now that I'm in pain, what can I do to use this pain to catapult myself to a new level of understanding, a new level of empowerment, a new greater clarity? What purpose can this pain accomplish for me? But don't ask why, ask what for. Big difference, man. In Hebrew, actually, the word lama means lima, for what? That's what lama actually means. It doesn't mean why, it means lima, for what? Okay? So we believe that all there ever was, is, and ever will be, the divine, is absolutely perfect. Absolute perfection includes the possibility of a imperfection that can become perfect. We are the expression of that aspect of absolute perfection. Okay? And Hashem is with us in our pain. Hashem is not ever against us. Never, ever, ever against us. Because that would be almost as if to say he's against himself.
What was the pasuk?
Anochi mo betzara. Another pasuk that we sing, we say, Gam ki eilech begeit zal mavid lo ira ra. Even if I'm walking in the valley of death, I will not fear evil. Ki atah imadi, because you are with me. The Zohar adds one word of commentary. Mamash, really. You are really with me in this valley of death. Right? So, you know, I've tried to counsel a lot of people, because a lot of people, you know, think because you're a rabbi, you know it all. And that's just not true for most rabbis other than myself. And, you know, it's just people create more pain by saying, why is God doing this? He must not like me. He hates me. He's so angry at me. I must be such a horrible sinner. And then what? There's nothing worse than getting to a point where you decree upon yourself a feeling that you are unworthy to grow and you are unworthy to find happiness. That's worse than what you're going through. And so you got to be so careful. And that's really a big part of learning Torah, is learning how to see things as they are and interpret them how they could be. That's it. That's, if you could master that, wow, that's what you do all day long learning Gemara. That's an unbelievable skill. It is the life skill to see what's there and interpret what can be. You know? And so so that's the first thing I want to clarify, that Hashem doesn't need us. And why are we going through his pain? Let him go through it for himself. I mean, like, those kind of questions are stuck in your dual mind, which is still under the influence of there's me and God, and we're separate entities far from each other. Okay? Now, what about people think that there is me and God? There's God, he's way over there, and there's me. Well, Judaism intentionally led people to believe that, right? That's called monotheism. And the reason why Judaism led people to believe that is for a very important reason. And what is that reason?
It's dangerous.
Because you need to know you're not God. Even though it's at the expense of thinking that you and God are separate, you need to know you're not God, okay? Now that you know that you're not God and that's really deeply ingrained within you for thousands of years, we're going to tell you a little secret, right? That there's nothing but God. But wait a second, there's nothing but God, but I'm not God. So now what do? I'm an illusion? Well, no, I've had years and years of training that I'm not an illusion. I'm not God and I'm very real. And I'm very really separate from him. I have my own independent identity. So now that I've got that very deep sense that I am real, I am valuable, and yet I am not God. So once they slip you the secret, you realize, Ein od milvado, there's nothing but God. And not God is? Starts with P, a part of God. Not God, not perfect, not naturally good, is a part of the absolute good, is a part of the absolute perfect, because the not perfect that can become perfect is a kind of perfection, right? And there's your answer, right? So what about all those people that believe that God is a guy in the sky and we are separate, independent entities far from them? Well, it's okay if that works for them. If they're doing mitzvahs and they're keeping Shabbos and they're happy, and okay, you know? They haven't quite fulfilled the mitzvah of Yichud Hashem. They don't have clear understanding of the deepest meaning of Shema Yisrael. All right, but maybe they're not ready for that. Maybe that's not important for them right now. Because as I mentioned at the very beginning of the year, what's really important is not to think right, but to act right. And so if you're thinking wrong, but you're acting right, which sometimes doesn't work, right? And so you think right, you think wrong. God is a separate entity over there, and you're a separate entity over here. But that has inspired you to keep halacha and keep mitzvot and be kind and be compassionate. And you believe that God is a loving God somewhere in the distance, you know, sending you flowers. And okay, great. It's working for you. It's working for you. My problem is I think it's not working for a lot of people anymore. And I believe that was the problem that the Hasidic movement identified. That it's not working. And when we learn that article where there are people that are living with the sense of jealousy and anger and resentment towards God, well, that's the question. For those people who are living with that sense of anger and that sense that God seems like a cartoon and a caricature, for those people who would laugh with a deep belly laugh at George Carlin's, shtick on God and religion, then somebody's got to tell them that there is another version that is, you know, there's the truth, and then there's the whole truth, you know. So anyways, and I mentioned, I really don't think you should try and teach your friends these things that I've been sharing with you. First of all, you just heard them. So it's very possibly that you aren't quite yet sharp enough to be able to, you know, you haven't sharpened the ideas yet to share them. If you want to share them with your friends, then the only thing I can do is encourage you to give them one of my books and let them read the book. You know, but for you to start saying to people, you know, as you're having a piece of pizza and a Coke, you know, there's nothing but God, it's just not the place. You know what I mean? It's not the time. You know, you're having a conversation with somebody on the bus. It's like these are very, very deep and serious, serious ideas that can be easily misunderstood and therefore are dangerous. There is a danger in sharing these ideas. And I don't think there's too many shiurim that are doing this, certainly not in a gap year yeshiva. I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah.
I don't see how it answers Ben's question, because why would it imply that the needing means that it's like far away? Because I have a heart. My heart, I'm way more than my heart, and it's part. And my heart is part of me, and I definitely need my heart. So I don't see how that answers Ben's question.
Okay, if you want to use the word need that way, then fine. We could say that we are an essential aspect of the full definition of perfection. Yes. Yes, that's why. But generally what need means is I'm lacking something that you have and I need to get from you. And that's not the point. The point is when you look at the full definition of absolute perfection, when you really understand the implications of absolute perfection, you realize that absolute perfection must include the possibility. Again, I'm very careful. Not the actuality, because if you say it must actualize, that would be a limitation too. Right? You can't say something that limits the unlimited. Okay? So, but to say, yes, the absolute perfect must include the possibility for becoming perfect. If the absolute perfect wants to make manifest that possibility, then here you are and here I am, and your life has awesome meaning. God is deeply invested in you and cares about your growth. All right? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, and we also have this idea that malchut, the idea of crowning God, is something that is some part or definition of God or some aspect of God that occurs through our own actions, our own choosing. So, the one that seems to imply that there is some aspect that is lacking its full expression that we are here to perfect. God, and number two, that like what are then the ramifications of choosing wrong, of choosing wrong?
The ramifications is self-betrayal. You are not living up to your potential. You're not living up to who you are, right? But don't worry, because the very fact that you failed creates a new opportunity for even greater success. And so there's never a situation that can't be turned into growth and recycled into becoming perfect. Okay? So you made a mistake. That's par for the course. If you couldn't be imperfect, then you couldn't choose to become perfect. If you couldn't be evil, then you couldn't choose to become good. And sometimes you're going to choose evil. And if you do, and then you do tshuva, you even cash in double. But you're not allowed to say, hey, man, I'm going to cash in double, so let me do a little evil today, and then I'll cash it tomorrow on tshuva, and then do more evil, and I'll cash in on tshuva. You're not allowed to do that. Right? That's you just get. Okay. Yeah.
How does this idea that you can always turn any bad thing you don't redeem it and turn it into something good, how does that play into the idea of like the death penalty within Judaism? That there are cases where you don't get a second chance?
Well, don't get a second chance in this round of life, but who says you're not coming back? Right. So if the Ariza believes in reincarnation, he has a whole book called Sefer Gilgulim. And so it's very possible that the best tikkun for you right now is death penalty, which almost never happened. But even if it does, that doesn't mean... and also, that's part of tshuva. The death penalty doesn't mean, you know, we're finishing your life as El. That's part of tshuva. If you accept upon yourself and you know that you're going to have to go through this yisurim, this pain called death, if you're makabel this onish, if you're makabel this penalty, and you embrace it, and you do tshuva and regret what you did, then you're growing. But the growing doesn't end here. The growing is going on and on and on. You don't end up stopping here. And then that's the idea of Olam Haba. First of all, people think Olam Haba is a place that you go when you die. That's not really, really technically what Olam Haba is referring to. That's called Gan Eden. When a person passes away, then they could potentially go into Gan Eden. But Olam Haba actually refers to a period in history. It's a period in history that happens after Tchiyas HaMetim. And it's called Olam Haba. And what is Olam Haba? It is a deep, visceral experience of Einon Mevado. Right now, what you are grappling to understand, right, you will viscerally experience when we get to the period of time called Olam Haba. Right now, we're just describing it, discussing it, you're taking notes, right? But I don't know how many people here can deeply say they experience Einod Mavado. They're just like grappling with the idea of Einod Mavado. They intuit that they are part of a greater self. They are part of a greater whole. And that Judaism is constantly reinforcing this experiencing, enable you to have this experience of being part of a greater whole. Okay? But still, it eludes us. But Olam Haba, you will know Einod Mavado. But yet it's also called Olam Haba. The Mekubalim say it means Haba Tamid. It's the world that is always coming. It never comes and that's it. But as soon as you thought it's coming, it's still coming more and more and more and more. Meaning you'll be in this state of mind where you'll experience this constant rush of greater and greater enlightenment, greater and greater movement. Okay, within the context of Einod Mavado. You will just be able to know more and more Einod Mavado. Just like, as I mentioned, love. Love is not a destiny. You will never arrive at love. Love goes on forever. You will hopefully feel this with your spouse, that you can love your wife and your children more and more and more. Right, and you can reveal things that you never knew because she's endless and you're endless, and that's why, quite frankly, every year I'm married to a different woman, right? Because my wife is just so new. Every year I discover things about my wife that I didn't know about her, and I discover things about myself that I didn't know about myself, you know, and it's just endless. And that's great. There's just endless surprise and endless amazement and endless yearning and endless new opportunities. You guys have to go to an event, so we're going to end in a couple more minutes, but I don't want to take up time. I know some of you guys have to go to different dinners, so you can go do that. All right. Any other questions? We got a couple more minutes and don't want to mevatel Torah. Okay, enjoy. Sure. Yeah.
I was wondering about my question about it's like where does it come from, the Andy Berry anti-Kant?
Oh.
Yeah.
I can only tell you my guesstimation. I think it first of all comes from a unfamiliarity with it, as well as the deep fears of the dangers of it, as well as when you say the word Kabbalah, what people generally think of is red threads and cameos, and that's, first of all, that so doesn't interest me. I guess I would, I'm more on the intellectual side of the Torah Sod. But most people, when they say, you know, Kabbalah, they think of weirdy things, you know. They think it's magic. They think it's like, you know, meditate on this name. And it's like I was on a radio show, and they asked me that there was an organization that was selling candles. And they were claiming that these candles will bring you a blessing of wealth. And so the interviewer said, do you believe that these candles can bring someone wealth? And I said, yes, the ones who are selling it are making a lot of money, you know? So that kind of a thing where people think there's like this water that's blessed by this rabbi and that's going to take care of all your problems. And I'm not saying that there could be a phenomenon of water blessed by a rabbi. But the point is that when people feel that that Kabbalah is hokey, it's because it's been identified with this kind of snake oil, quick fix. I'm into tikkun olam. I'm not into quick fix, you know. And so these teachings, and that's why I found Rav Kook to really open it up, is, you know, I had delved into the teachings of the Arizal for many, 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 many years. But then when I started to see what Rav Kook revealed, it just like, wow. And as well as Chassidut took the writings of the Arizal and began to translate it into a psychological language, because the Arizal is giving you a profound understanding of the psychology of mankind, you know. So, but I think the people who distrust it haven't really had a serious and sophisticated encounter with it, and they just think it's people doing weird things. They think it's numerology and astrology, and they think it's about escape and not taking responsibility. Yeah, John.
Since Pesach is coming up, can you maybe speak about how sort of like Pesach fits into this whole like line of thought, as in like why do we need to be slaves in Egypt in order to come out?
Okay, great, great question. Well, the truth is that when we were at Sinai, Hashem said, Anochi, I am Hashem, all there ever was, is, and ever will be, Einod Milvadi, right? I am absolute perfection. I never changed. And yet, Elokecha, and yet I am your coach. I am your judge. I set standards. I set rules. I evaluate you. I am a God that sets the stage for growth. That's what Elohim means. People use it as a judge in the sense I'm being judged. But if there is no one judging, then there's no growth. Judgment means there's a standard that you are expected to live up to. There's rules that you're expected to live by so that you can become the best you can be. And the judge is saying, you're failing. You're not doing your best. And because of that, you're going to get this particular punishment, not because I'm trying to hurt you, not because I'm trying to take care of my ego because you offended me. It's because this is what you need to grow, right? So if I'm the standards manager and I show up at a plant, right, and I start checking the plant and I see that this plant is under the standards of what the government has set up, well, then you get fined, not because, you see, we're going to show you who's boss. It's because this is how we're going to get you to live up to your potential, okay? So therefore, Enochi Hashem Elokecha, I am all that ever was, ever will be. There's only one self, right? I am absolute perfection. I am Elokecha, but I am your judge, right? I am your coach. I am the one that has set the stage for growth, right? And I'm the one that took you out of Egypt, right? But I'm also the one that put you into Egypt, right? Remember a story from Rabbi Noach Weinberg, Zichron Levracha from Eishes Torah. He said a fellow came to him and said, "Rabbi, do you actually believe in God?" And Rav Noach says, "Well, yes, I do." He says, "Really, an intelligent man like you actually believes in God?" He said, "Well, yes, I do." He said, "Well, Rabbi, I also believe in God, but not for any rational reasons, but I experienced a miracle." He said, "I was on my motorcycle, and I'm zooming down this road on a mountain, and my bike hit a rock, and I went flying over the cliff. And as I was descending to my death, literally, Rabbi, I experienced two hands catch me and slowly bring me down to the ground, and I came out without a scratch. So, Rabbi, I know there's a God because God saved me." And Rav Noach said, "Well, I'm glad you know who saved you, but did you ever wonder who pushed you off?" Okay? So, you know, to thank God for taking us out of Egypt, right, is really half the thanks. Because what you really need to be doing, and this takes a lot of guts, is to thank Hashem for putting you into Egypt. "Well, I'm thanking you for taking me out of Egypt. Who put me in Egypt in the first place? HaKadosh Baruch Hu put you into Egypt. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu, your children will be slaves for 100, and now I'm going to thank him for doing that to me? Well, first of all, I'm not thanking him for doing that to me because there isn't me and him. There's just him. I'm going to thank him that I'm the part of him that can get out of Egypt." Wow, that's growth. And all of Judaism is getting out of Egypt, getting out of limitations, getting out of slavery, getting out of a world that's stuck in gravity and is static and can't grow beyond. And so that's what Pesach is. It's the celebration of growth, and that's why it's called Chag Aviv. It's the holiday of spring, because what does spring represent?
Rebirth
and growth, right? And so here, all winter long, you got this seed dying in the ground, freezing away. And yet suddenly, springtime, he comes to realize that what seemed to be death, what seemed to be static, what seemed to be the end of the story, was the beginning of an even more glorious story. And that's what's amazing about the story of Egypt, that you can always get out of your prison. You can get out of your addiction. You can get out of your limitation. You can keep growing. And that's what we're doing here. We're growing. And the wine, what's wine all about? Well, wine is such an interesting drink because it's grapes that have been crushed. So imagine you're a grape, and then they start crushing you. Well, how would you feel? You'd feel pretty crushed, right? Right? You'd feel really kind of crushed, wouldn't you? And if someone were to say to you that this is actually your growth, you are becoming even more potent, more valuable, right? More sought after, you wouldn't believe it, would you? You think, what are you talking about? They're stepping on me, right? They're crushing me. And then you realize, oh my gosh, all this is turning me into fine wine. And so that's the idea here of the wine is so connected to the freedom, because the greatest freedom is the freedom to see and to choose to believe that no matter what situation you're in, it's an opportunity for growth. And that's what you always have to say to yourself. Right.
So why do we thank him for putting us in Egypt?
Why don't we thank him?
Like never in like the liturgy.
We actually do. Because what we actually do is we are taught that we have to eat the maror and the matzah together. Right? And that means that I'm now going to celebrate how the bitterness and the redemption are really two halves of one whole. Right? As the Zohar says, what makes the sweet sweet? It's the bitter. But if the bitter makes the sweet sweet, then that means that the bitter is part of the sweet and it's only and always been sweet. Right? Okay, well, so you should have a great, great Pesach, and I'll be joining you at the Kumsitz.